Chapter 6. S.E. has money, has she? £80,000, and £20,000 for each of her children. I know it for a fact, said the strange gentleman. I'm in the law, and we of our faith, you know pretty well what the great families amongst us are worth. Who was Mr. Manasseh? Said I, a man of enormous wealth, a tobacco merchant, West Indies, a fellow of no birth, however, and who, between ourselves, married a woman that is not much better than she should be. My dear sir, whispered he, she is always in love. Now it is with that Captain Dobble. Last week it was somebody else, and it may be you next week, if ha, you are disposed to enter the lists. I wouldn't, for my part, have the woman with twice her money. What did it matter to me, whether the woman was good or not, provided she was rich? My course was quite clear. I told Dobble all that this gentleman had informed me, and being a pretty good hand at making a story, I made the widow appear so bad, that the poor fellow was quite frightened, and fairly quitted the field. Ha! I'm dashed if I did not make him believe that Mrs. Manasseh had murdered her last husband. I played my game so well, thanks to the information that my friend the lawyer had given me, that in a month I had got the widow to show a most decided partiality for me. I sat by her at dinner, I drank with her at the L's, I rode with her, I danced with her, and at a picnic to Kenilworth, where we drank a good deal of champagne, I actually popped the question, and was accepted. In another month, Robert Stubbs Esquire, led to the altar, Lee, widow of the late Z. Manasseh Esquire, of St. Kitts. We drove up to London in her comfortable chariot, the children and servants following in a postchaise. I paid, of course, for everything, and until our house in Berkeley Square was painted, we stopped at Tevens Hotel. My own estate had been sold, and the money was lying at a bank in the city. About 3 days after our arrival, as we took our breakfast in the hotel, previous to a visit to Mrs. Stubbs' banker, where certain little transfers were to be made, a gentleman was introduced, who, I saw at a glance, was of my wife's persuasion. He looked at Mrs. Stubbs, and made a bow. Perhaps it will be convenient to you to pay this little bill, £152? My love, says she, will you pay this? It is a trifle which I had really forgotten. My soul, said I have really not the money in the house. Well, then, Captain Stubbs, says he, I must do my duty, and arrest you. Here is the writ. Tom, keep the door. My wife fainted, the children screamed, and I fancy my condition, as I was obliged to march off to a sponging house along with a horrid sheriff's officer. October. Mars and Venus in opposition. I shall not describe my feelings when I found myself in a cage in Cursitor Street, instead of that fine house in Berkeley Square, which was to have been mine as the husband of Mrs. Manasseh. What a place! In an odious, dismal street leading from Chancery Lane. A hideous Jew boy opened the second of three doors, and shut it when Mr. Knab and I, almost fainting, had entered. Then he opened the third door, and then I was introduced to a filthy place, called a coffee room, which I exchanged for the solitary comfort of a little dingy back parlor, where I was left for a while, to brood over my miserable fate. Fancy the change between this and Berkeley Square. Was I, after all my pains, and cleverness, and perseverance, cheated at last? Had this Mrs. Manasseh been imposing upon me, and were the words of the wretch I met at the table d'hôte at Leamington only meant to mislead me, and take me in? I determined to send for my wife, and know the whole truth. I saw at once that I had been the victim of an infernal plot, and that the carriage, the house in town, the West India fortune, were only so many lies which I had blindly believed. It was true that the debt was but £150, and I had £2,000 at my banker's. But was the loss of her £80,000 nothing? Was the destruction of my hopes nothing? The accursed addition to my family of a Jewish wife and three Jewish children, nothing? and all these I was to support out of my £2,000. I had better have stopped at home with my mama and sisters, whom I really did love, and who produced me £80 a year. I had a furious interview with Mrs. Stubbs, and when I charged her, the base wretch, with cheating me, like a brazen serpent as she was, she flung back the cheat in my teeth, and swore I had swindled her. Why did I marry her, when she might have had 20 others? She only took me, she said, because I had £20,000. I had said I possessed that sum, but in love, you know, and war all's fair. We parted quite as angrily as we met, and I cordially vowed that, when I had paid the debt into which I had been swindled by her, I would take my £2,000, and depart to some desert island, or, at the very least, to America, and never see her more, or any of her Israelitish brood. There was no use in remaining in the sponging house, for I knew that there were such things as detainers, and that where Mrs. Stubbs owed £100, she might owe £1,000, so I sent for Mr. Knapp, and tendering him a check for £150, and his costs, requested to be let out forthwith. "Here, fellow," said I, "is a check on Childs for your paltry sum." "It may be a check on Childs," says Mr. Knapp, "but I should be a baby to let you out on such a paper as that." "Well," said I, "Childs is but a step from this. You may go and get the cash, just give me an acknowledgement." Knapp drew out the acknowledgement with great punctuality, and set off for the banker's, whilst I prepared myself for departure from this abominable prison. He smiled as he came in. "L," said I, "you have touched your money, and now, I must tell you, that you are the most infernal rogue and extortioner I ever met with." "Oh, no, Mr. Stubbs," says he, grinning still. "Here is some greater rogue than me, much greater." "Fellow," said I, "don't stand grinning before a gentleman, but give me my hat and cloak, and let me leave your filthy den." "Stop, Stubbs," says he, not even mistering me this time. "Here is a letter, which you had better read." I opened the letter. Something fell to the ground. It was my check. The letter ran thus: Messrs. Child and Company present their compliments to Captain Stubbs, and regret that they have been obliged to refuse payment of the enclosed, having been served this day with an attachment by Messrs. Solomonson and Company, which compels them to retain Captain Stubbs' balance of 2010L. 11.60 until the decision of the suit of Solomonson v. Stubbs. Fleet Street. "You see," says Mr. Knapp, "as I read this dreadful letter, you see, Stubbs, dear vast two debts, a little one and a big one. So they arrested you for the little one, and attached your money for the big one. Don't laugh at me for telling this story. If you knew what tears are blotting over the paper as I write it, if you knew that for weeks, after I was more like a madman than a sane man, a madman in the Fleet prison, where I went instead of to the desert island, what had I done to deserve it? Hadn't I always kept an eye to the main chance? Hadn't I lived economically, and not like other young men? Had I ever been known to squander or give away a single penny? No. I can lay my hand on my heart, and, thank heaven, say, no. Why was I punished so? Let me conclude this miserable history. 7 months my wife saw me once or twice, and then dropped me altogether. I remained in that fatal place. I wrote to my dear mama, begging her to sell her furniture, but got no answer. All my old friends turned their backs upon me. My action went against me. I had not a penny to defend it. Solomonson proved my wife's debt, and seized my £2,000. As for the detainer against me, I was obliged to go through the court for the relief of insolvent debtors. I passed through it, and came out a beggar. But fancy the malice of that wicked stiff old kind. He appeared in court as my creditor for 3L, with 16 years interest at 5%, for a pair of top boots. The old thief produced them in court, and told the whole story. Lord Cornwallis, the detection, the pumping and all. Commissioner Dubabwig was very funny about it. Oh, Dr. Swishtail would not pay you for the boots, eh, Mr. Stifflekind? No, he said. When I asked him for payment, they was ordered by a young boy, and I ought to have gone to his schoolmaster. What? Then you came on a bootless errand, eh, sir? A laugh. Bootless? No, sir, I brought the boots back with me. How the devil else could I show them to you? Another laugh. You've never sold them since, Mr. Ticklishins? I never would sell them. I swore I never would, on purpose to be revenged on that Stops. What? Your wound has never been healed, eh? That do you mean with your bootless errands, and your souling and healing? I tell you I have done that I swore to do. I have exposed him at school, I have broke off a marriage for him, 20 gold, have had £20,000, and now I have showed him up in a court of justice. That is that I have done, and that's enough. And then the old wretch went down, whilst everybody was giggling and staring at poor me, as if I was not miserable enough already. This seems the dearest pair of boots you ever had in your life, Mr. Stubbs, said Commissioner Dubabwick very archly, and then he began to inquire about the rest of my misfortunes. In the fullness of my heart I told him the whole of them. How Mr. Solomonson the attorney had introduced me to the rich widow, Mrs. Manasseh, who had £50,000, and an estate in the West Indies. How I was married, and arrested on coming to town, and cast in an action for £2,000 brought against me by this very Solomonson for my wife's debts. Stop, says a lawyer in the court. Is this woman a showy black-haired woman with one eye? Very often drunk, with 3 children? Solomonson, short, with red hair? Exactly so, said I, with tears in my eyes. That woman has married 3 men within the last 2 years. One in Ireland, and one at Bath. A Solomonson is, I believe, her husband, and they both are off for America 10 days ago. But why did you not keep your £2,000? Said the lawyer. Sir, they attached it. Oh, well, we may pass you. You have been unlucky, Mr. Stubbs, but it seems as if the biter had been bit in this affair. No, said Mr. Dubabwig. Mr. Stubbs is the victim of a fatal attachment. November. A general post delivery. I was a free man when I went out of the court, but I was a beggar. I, Captain Stubbs, of the bold North Bungays, did not know where I could get a bed or a dinner. As I was marching sadly down Portugal Street, I felt a hand on my shoulder, and a rough voice which I knew well. Well, Mr. Stubbs, have I not kept my promise? I told you them boots would be a ruin. I was much too miserable to reply, and only cast my eyes towards the roofs of the houses, which I could not see for the tears. That, you begin to cry, and blubber like a child? You would marry, would you? And nothing would do for you, but a wife vid money, ha, ha, but you veered a pigeon, and she was to grow. As he has plucked you too, pretty valet, ha, ha. Oh, Mr. Stifflekind, said I, don't laugh at my misery. As he has not left me a single shilling under heaven. And I shall starve. I do believe I shall starve. And I began to cry fit to break my heart. Starve. Stuff and nonsense. You will never die of starving, you will die of hanging, I think, ho, ho. And it is much easier way too. I didn't say a word, but cried on, till everybody in the street turned round and stared. Come, come, said Stifflekind, do not cry, Captain Stubbs, it is not good for a captain to cry, ha, ha. Dear, come with me, and you shall have a dinner, and a breakfast too, which shall cost you nothing, until you can pay with your earnings. And so this curious old man, who had persecuted me all through my prosperity, grew compassionate towards me in my ill luck, and took me home with him as he promised. Saw your name among the insolvents, and I vowed, you know, to make you repent them boots. Dear, now, it is done and forgotten, look you. Here, Betty, Betchin, make the spare bed, and put a clean knife and fork. Lord Cornwallis has come to dine with me. I lived with this strange old man for 6 weeks. I kept his books, and did what little I could to make myself useful, carrying about boots and shoes, as if I had never borne His Majesty's commission. He gave me no money, but he fed and lodged me comfortably. The men and boys used to laugh, and call me General, and Lord Cornwallis, and all sorts of nicknames, and old Stifflekind made 1,000 new ones for me. One day I can recollect one miserable day, as I was polishing on the trees a pair of boots of Mr. Stifflekind's manufacture, the old gentleman came into the shop, with a lady on his arm. "Here's Captain Stops," said he. "Here's that ornament to His Majesty's service." I came in from the back shop, where I was polishing the boots, with one of them in my hand. "Look, my dear," says he, "here's an old friend of yours, His Excellency Lord Cornwallis. Who would have thought such a nobleman?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.